This is a sermon I have never given before. So this is unusual. After 50 years of giving sermons, it's hard to find a subject that I hadn't covered sometime before. But this is one that I've not given before. You know, a lot is going on in the world, and we look at it, and we discuss it, and we talk about, right now, in the news, the Philippines, we've been praying for them, the meetings on Iran that are being held, and you really get totally different pictures on that meeting if you go to NBC and CNN as opposed to Fox. You really get totally different pictures, don't you? If you hear from, and then if you, Israel, the Prime Minister, Netanyahu, to hear him, it's really bad. But you know something? It's interesting. When you study what's going on, we usually, we're looking at the way the United States is, what is it, $17 trillion in the hole right now? $17 trillion? I haven't figured it out really, but somebody said that's over $1 million for every American. Somebody figured that out? I've heard that. I didn't actually sit down and... And our country, if you look back and you say, how did we get there? You say, well, President Obama. But it really started before then when we had two wars going at the same time. When I was young, there was an expression you never hear anymore. And it was about whether it was called guns or butter. How many of you remember that? See? Fewer than half the hands going up. Maybe less than a third. Guns or butter. What did it mean? It meant that if you're going to have a war, you cut back on all the things that might be pleasant. Like butter. The government cuts back on other things. But we cut back on nothing when we went to two different wars. And we were going in debt, and then it just expanded. It just keeps going. Of course, we have what is called a fiat currency. A fiat currency means a currency that it comes out of thin air. There's absolutely nothing backing it but the good faith and credit of the United States government. Now I'm smiling. The good faith and credit, which we almost said, no, we don't have good faith and credit, we're not going to pay. We're going to go without. So we look at these things, and the newsmen look at them, and we study history, and we say, why are these things happening? Well, because this happened or because that happened. I get courses from a company called The Great Courses. How many of you have heard of this company, The Great Courses? Have you gotten any of them? No? They send you stuff, but you've never actually gotten one. I get them and I listen to them in the car. This particular one is called The Early Middle Ages, and I know everybody in here is saying, wow, boy, I wish I had that, because you're just really interested in the Early Middle Ages. The Early Middle Ages go from about 300 A.D. to about 1000 A.D., and it covers, it's the period between what is called antiquity, which is talking about the Roman Empire, until you get in... the Middle Ages take you up to the Renaissance, but the early Middle Ages would go to about 1000 AD. And it's called the Dark Ages. It's when dark in a couple of ways. There was very little writing. There wasn't a lot of scholarship. And because of that, there weren't a lot of historians. And they weren't writing much. So it's, you're kind of looking very darkly at these ages. So that's one reason. But then most people were uneducated. You get into the period of the Carolingians dynasty, and you're saying, who are they? You don't even care. Started with Charles Martel. He's the guy who kept the Arabs out of Northern Europe. Was Charles Martel. I could have a show of hands. How many of you remember Charles Martel? Martel, you remember. All right. Martel means the hammer. He's the grandfather of a guy you have heard of, Charlemagne. Charlemagne could not read. Now he had some toady sycophants in his court who claimed that he could speak Latin and could read, but he couldn't. He had trouble even signing his name. He practiced it. He had a little thing underneath his pillow that he would pull out to remind him on how to sign his name. But this is 24 classes, half hour each, going through it. And they discuss all of these men. You talk about the fall of the Roman Empire. Talks about the different men who, the reasons. Edward Gibbon, to decline and fall of the Roman Empire, he basically looked at politics. Or then you have, and he was a British historian, the Belgian historian, Henri Perrin, said, no, it wasn't the politics, it was the economics. Because Justinian, and by the way, if you look at all the papers on the Roman Empire fall and its resurrection, the first resurrection was called the Imperial Resurrection, or Restoration, under Justinian. Because Domitian had divided the kingdom clearly to Constantine had started with Constantinople in the east and Rome in the west, and he divided the kingdoms, and Domitian divided them even further, and the eastern kingdom remained. Rome fell in 576, sort of fell, or 476, I should say. Justinian restored it. And it says at the behest of the Pope. And so you read, all of that is in here. Most interesting class I've ever gotten from the great courses. And you say, this sounds like the dullest class you've ever heard of. It's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. However, historians look at the period and the people. Say, where am I going with this sermon? May have said that about sermonette. I liked it. If you look at World War II, the history of World War II, what are you going to hear about? You're going to hear about Hitler, Mussolini, Stalin, Churchill, and here's a name I've mentioned before that most of you in here don't have a clue on. Because you don't remember that I mentioned him before. Tojo. Anybody our age, you remember? When I was a little boy, we hated Tojo. There were songs about how awful he was. The prime minister, he was a general, became prime minister of Japan. And he was the one MacArthur accused of really getting them into the war. Trying to defend Hirohito. Although when you look at history, Emperor Hirohito definitely was involved in running it, and Tojo only followed what Hirohito told him to do. But MacArthur was smart. Hang Tojo, which they did. Tojo tried to kill himself. Shot himself with a gun, but missed his heart. So they saved him in the hospital and then hung him. But the reason he wanted to save the emperor, MacArthur, was the way to control the Japanese was by controlling the emperor. If you had the emperor, and the emperor didn't tell his people to revolt, which is kind of hard to tell them to revolt when you've got the throat. So he controlled the Japanese people, and they became pacified by controlling Hirohito. So they didn't charge Hirohito with war crimes. They deliberately, it's come out that they deliberately said, we want to exonerate Hirohito. But they hung the others. I've actually been to the place where they hung them. My dad took me when I was a boy. When we went to Japan, he said, this is where they hung them. It still was there. And now you'd look at that as you'd look at Roosevelt, Chiang Kai-shek. I could ask, how many of you remember Chiang Kai-shek? There you go. More people. Then Tojo, not many, who was the one really in China at the time. I want to turn to Acts 17, verse 26. We're not really looking at what is controlling history when we look at what we call history. When we look at Charlemagne, who is crowned emperor over the Roman Empire in 800 AD. He says he didn't expect it, that it was a surprise on Christmas Day in 800 AD that the Pope came in, brought the crown of the Roman Empire and set it on Charlemagne's head and crowned him emperor of the Roman Empire. One of the resurrections. I believe that was the second resurrection of the Roman Empire. The next head, the next horn. And it's probably true that he didn't know, because the Pope was trying to get Charlemagne to protect him and be his defender. We can look at all of that, but there's something more. In Acts 17, verse 26, it says, and he has made from one blood, that's Eve and or Adam, every nation of men. We know the blood's a little different, skin's a little different, different things about different people. Some tribes are shorter, some are taller. But he's made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on all the face of the earth. Now I want you to notice this. And has determined their pre-appointed times and the boundaries of their dwellings. So when you're looking at the early Middle Ages and you're talking about the Goths, the Ostrogoths moving into Italy, the Visigoths moving into Spain, the Franks controlling both the area of what is now France and Germany, down to the Pyrenees. And the Lombards moving into northern Italy. And you say to yourself, well, this is done because of this and this, and this emperor did this, and this king did this. No, no. God has determined their pre-appointed times and the boundaries of their dwellings. I want to turn to Deuteronomy chapter 2, verses 1 through 5. When we look at politics, when we look, by the way, I mentioned we have a fiat currency backed by nothing but air and the promises of the United States. You know, at one time it was backed by gold. And gold was what? $35 an ounce. And you couldn't own bullion. Most people were not allowed to own bullion. You could buy gold, jewelry, but you couldn't own bullion. Who was it that removed the gold standard? Anybody remember? It was not Roosevelt. Nixon. It was Richard Nixon. See, it was not a Democrat. It was a Republican who did that. And who opened up China to become so great? Nixon, yeah. But was it really Nixon? Was it really? You know, you got to look back and say to yourself, or even Eisenhower. When the French and the British wanted to defend the Suez Canal and go in and throw Nasser out and keep the Suez Canal for themselves, who was it that told them they couldn't? Eisenhower. Eisenhower later said it was the greatest mistake he ever made in his presidency. But was it really Eisenhower who made that decision? Was it really Nixon? Notice in Deuteronomy chapter 2, verses 1 through 5. It says, "Then we turned and journeyed," this is Moses speaking, "into the wilderness of the way of the Red Sea as the Lord spoke to me. And we skirted Mount Seir for many days. And the Lord spoke to me, saying," verse 3, "You've skirted this mountain long enough. Turn northward." That is going toward what we call Palestine. Verse 4, "And commanded the people, saying, you are about to pass through the territory of your brethren, the descendants of Esau, who live in Seir. And they will be afraid of you. Therefore, watch yourselves carefully. Do not meddle with them. For I will not give you any of their land. No, not so much as one footstep. Because I have given Mount Seir to Esau as a possession." So who determined? Notice what we read in Acts 17, verse 26, that he determined their appointed times and the boundaries of their dwellings. God determines where people live. God gave, at least at that time, Mount Seir to Esau, though later he removed it from him. But he said to Israel, you can't even have a footstep of that. I have given that to Esau, Mount Seir to Esau as a possession. And so, if we look at it, the one really controlling every bit of the politics among nations and the outcomes of wars and the movements of people and where people live is God. I want to turn to Deuteronomy 28, verses 1 and 2. I really want to get to verse 12, but we'll start with verse 1 and 2. Deuteronomy 28, verse 1. "Now it shall come to pass, if you diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully all His commandments, which I command you today, that the Lord your God will set you high above all nations of the earth. And all these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you because you obey the voice of the Lord your God." And then he lists blessing after blessing after blessing. Food and health. And verse 12, Deuteronomy 28, verse 12. "The Lord will open to you His good treasure, the heavens, to give the rain to your land in its season and to bless all the work of your hand. You shall lend to many nations." And when I was young, that was true. That was absolutely true. the United States would lend to many nations. After World War II, we made many loans and actually gifts to Europe under the Marshall Plan and put Japan back on its feet and gave to them and the Philippines. To bless all the work of your hand, you shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. And now the United States is the greatest debtor nation that has ever existed. And we could blame President Obama. We could blame President Bush. But you know, they're just tools in the hand of God. I mean, if you look at it, you'd say, this is complete idiocy to be going trillions of dollars in debt every year to the point where many, many economists say we will never, ever be able to pay it off. It's impossible. The only way you can do it is by devaluing your currency. And even then, what have you got? See, then the price of anything you bring into the nation skyrockets, the price of oil. But it isn't really these men. God is the one who says, I'm going to give you money to where you'll not owe any. You'll lend, but you won't be borrowing. That is if you obey. And the promise is really spiritual. It's of a spiritual nature. I want to turn to Revelation chapter 9, verses 13 through 16. And I'll give you the title of this sermon that I've never given before. And the title is, The Spirits Directing World News and Politics. We tend to look at humans and human mistakes and human wisdom and human foolishness. But the spirits directing world news and politics. And here's an interesting example in Revelation 9, verses 13 through 16. This is the sixth trumpet. It's interesting, the sixth trumpet and the sixth bowl plague are so similar. And just, you'll see that. They're not the same, but they're similar. Revelation 9, verse 13 through 16, Then the sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar which is before God, saying to the sixth angel who had the trumpet, Release the four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates. Now the Euphrates, from Palestine, it's kind of to the northwest, and it runs in a line that separates them from the northeast and the east. So this great river, and going up, you're going to get up into Kazakhstan, you're going to get over and go far enough into China, into India. The great river Euphrates was a dividing line between them and the east and the northeast. And so he says, release the four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates. Four angels. Now these are not very likely to be righteous angels. But God uses Satan and other fallen angels. He uses human beings who are not righteous. So the four angels who had been prepared for the hour and day and month and year were released to kill a third of mankind. Can you imagine? A third of mankind. And who's doing it? Four angels. Just four. That's all it takes. Now, maybe they had some help. Maybe they had some help. But you know, if God allows Satan or the angels to do something, there's no protection. They will do what they want. What is flesh compared to these incredibly powerful spirit beings? So these four angels have been prepared and were released to kill a third of mankind, but they don't do it on their own. Notice now the number of the army of the horsemen was 200 million. I heard the number of them. So that's 50 million per angel. That's a lot of people controlled by these four spirits. Now, let's go to Revelation 16, verse 12 through 16. And this is going to be the sixth bowl plague. See, when that army comes, and it will come, and the world sees it, and the people are looking at it, how many people will think, ah, four angels? No, they're going to say, you know, here's this leader, and here's this human leader, and here's this leader in China, and here's this leader in Mongolia, and here's this leader in Russia, whatever. Look at these leaders have decided to do this. People won't be announcing on the news four angels. They don't realize that world news is really being controlled by spirit beings, not by humans. Humans are just putty in their hands. Well, in Revelation 16, verse 12, then the sixth angel poured out his bowl on the great river Euphrates. See, here's the Euphrates again. And its water was dried up so that the way of the kings from the east might be prepared. So here comes another huge army from the east. Now, how did they come? What causes them to come? Wouldn't you say you sent an army of 200 million and they really didn't finish the job, but now you need to come again and they're going to come another time. There's going to be a third time. But that's in the book of Ezekiel. We won't cover that today. And verse 13, what makes them come? I saw three unclean spirits. God allows unclean spirits. Like frogs. That's sad. Frogs are kind of cute. But, you know, I suppose if one jumps on a lady, most ladies scream. Coming out of the mouth of the dragon, out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet. So here are these three demons. Verse 14. For they are the spirits of demons performing signs which go out to the kings of the earth and of the whole world. That is, of the whole world. Now this time, it only takes three of them to gather them to the battle of that great day of God Almighty. Behold, I am coming as a thief. Blessed is he who watches and keeps his garments, lest he walk naked and they see his shame. And they gathered them together to the place called in Hebrew Armageddon. So do you see the picture here that we tend to look at history and we look at human leaders and we don't realize, we're not thinking that there's a spirit and spirits guiding this whole thing. There are spirits guiding Iran. There are spirits guiding Greece. There are spirits guiding France and even spirits guiding the United States. Hopefully a little more righteous. Michael is listed. We'll see. But he can only do so much as God allows because of our obedience or disobedience. In Luke chapter 4, verse 5 through 8, we're familiar with this. This is where Jesus was tempted by the devil. And the devil says something that I think is only partially true here. In Luke 4, verse 5 through 8. It says, "Then the devil, taking him," that's taking Jesus, "up on a high mountain, showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time." China. The Mongols. Japan. All the nations of the earth. All of Africa and the wealth of some of the emperors of Africa who had vast amounts of gold. He showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. So he would have certainly seen the Roman Empire, which was extant at that time. And the devil said to him, "All this authority I will give you, and their glory. For this has been delivered to me, and I give it to whomever I wish." Now, Satan is the father of lies. And this is not totally true. Because he can only give it to those that God allows him to give it to. He's making it sound like, "I can just give it to anybody I want. You know, God is not involved in it. I give it to whomever I wish." Well, he gives it to whomever he wishes when God allows it. "Therefore, if you will worship me before me, all will be yours." And Jesus answered and said to him, "Get behind me, Satan, for it is written, 'You shall worship the Lord your God, and him only you shall serve.'" 1 Kings chapter 22, verses 19 through 25. We've read this many times, but it is so fascinating. It's a little glimpse into how God deals with his angels. 1 Kings 22, verses 19 through 25. And you might say to yourself, God can do anything he wants at any time. He created the universe. He created the earth, our solar system, our galaxy, all the galaxies, all the dark matter. Everything is under his control. Why does he need angels? He's got seven who go out and look all over the earth, and the seven eyes of the Lord bringing him knowledge. Does he need it? No. Does he need me? No. Does he need United Church of God? No. But you know, he does things through you and me, doesn't he? Your children, he could come down and teach them personally. He doesn't need Mike and Mark to take sage in the woods to teach sage. He could do it himself and do a wonderful job. But he doesn't do that. He lets us rear children. And he uses people on earth. And he uses spirits. They're his children too. And he lets his children learn by doing. And he gives them wide parameters, just like he gives you and me wide parameters as to how we live our life. He doesn't come down and come up to our ear and say, "This is the way, walk you in it." That will happen in the world tomorrow, but it's not happening now. And even the angels, he allows great parameters and leeway. And you know, obviously they, just like us, get the idea that God's really not doing everything himself. And not totally. We have to control our lives. We have to do things. We have to preach. And we do. He lets us preach the gospel. as if we're doing it all ourselves. And we reach out to call people. But it's God who calls people. Paul said, you know, I planted, Apollos watered, but God brings the increase. If he doesn't bring the increase, there'll be no increase. But you'd say, well, Paul and Barnabas, and they did all these things. Apollos, they did all these things. It was God who did it all. When he went to Corinth, God said, I have many people there. It wasn't Paul's doing. He was just a tool in God's hands. But God let Paul do it as if he had to do it all himself. And here in 1 Kings 22, verse 19, and this is a prophet of God. He's talking to Ahab. And Jehoshaphat was there, the king. Ahab, the king of Israel, and Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah. And then Micaiah said, therefore hear the word of the Lord. I saw the Lord sitting on his throne. What is an interesting vision into the throne room of God. And all the host of heaven standing by, on his right hand and on his left. So here's this huge, vast number of angels. And God could do anything he wanted. He could kill Ahab, bang, like that. But he didn't do it. Instead he said, and the Lord said, who will persuade Ahab to go up, that he may fall at Ramoth-Gilead? Ramoth-Gilead was across the Jordan. Gilead was on the other side of the Jordan, on the east side. So one spoke in this manner, and another spoke in that manner. Well, Ramoth-Gilead was supposed to be part of Israel, but Syria had taken it over. And so they're going to go up and deliver it back to Israel, they think, the kings. So anyway, here are these spirits come forward, and one says, well, I think this way we can cause Ahab to go up that he may die at Ramoth-Gilead. And another one said, well, here's the way we can do it. See, now God didn't say, here's what I want you to do. He said, here's what I want to happen. What's the best way? Don't you know God knew the best way? But he allowed his angels to have some input there, both the good and bad angels. So one spoke in this manner and another spoke in that manner. Then a spirit, this is obviously not a righteous spirit, came forward and stood before the Lord. God allows demons, Satan, others to come there, cut deals. Satan cut a deal with him over Job. And stood before the Lord and said, I will persuade him. And the Lord said to him, in what way? As if the Lord didn't already know what this spirit was going to say. So he said, I will go out and be a lying spirit in the mouth of all his prophets. Obviously not a righteous angel. God allows evil people to do evil things. He allowed Hitler, Mussolini, Stalin, Tojo, go back through history, Attila the Hun. I'll be a lying spirit in the mouth of all his prophets. And the Lord said, you shall persuade him and also prevail. I'm not telling you to lie, but you want to do that? Go ahead. Go out and do so. Now, back to Micaiah. Micaiah is saying, talking to Ahab, therefore look, the Lord has put a lying spirit in the mouth of all these prophets of yours, and the Lord has declared disaster against you. Reminds me of when it says that God was angry with Israel and he persuaded David to number Israel. And yet there's another place that said Satan persuaded David to number Israel. And people say, well, now this one passage says that Satan persuaded David to do it, and this other passage says that God persuaded David to do it. Which is it? Was it God or Satan? And the answer is yes. God probably held court. look, there's the problem down here. I want to do so and so. And Satan said, well, I'll go down and I'll persuade David to number Israel, which they were commanded to not do unless God told them to. And God would have said to Satan, go ahead, you will prevail. It says, and the Lord has declared disaster against you. Now here's one of the false prophets, Zedekiah. Zedekiah, the son of Chenaanah, went near and struck Micaiah on the cheek and said, which way did the Spirit of the Lord go from me to speak to you? So he's being a little sarcastic because he had had a spirit come to him, this lying spirit. And so he's saying to Micaiah, who happened to be a true prophet of God, which way did the Spirit go from me to you? And Micaiah said, boy, this would be scary. Indeed, you shall see on that day when you go into an inner chamber to hide. Now, it makes you wonder, what did he see? What spirit did he see? What demon did God allow to go down and deal with him? In an inner, he's hiding in an inner chamber and he thinks, I'm in here all safe. And then something comes. That sounds really scary. In Jude chapter 1 verse 9, God allows the angels to have disputes and disagreements. God could settle it all. But he uses righteous angels. He uses evil angels. He allows us to be in a world with evil people and righteous people. We have found, the Bible talks about evil people who have crept into the church of God. And he allows that. In Jude chapter 1 verse 9, yet Michael the archangel, in contending with the devil. Listen to this. Here are two angels having a disagreement. They're having a contention. And one is a righteous angel and the other is an evil angel, Michael and Satan. And he's contending with the devil, who still had a high position. When he disputed about the body of Moses, and we've wondered what it was, and we've suggested that Satan wanted to make the body of Moses a place of worship, of idolatry. You know, if they could find his grave, it would become, you know, somebody would build a big church or a mosque or all of them around there, and there'd be all kinds of people worshiping, you know, the bones of the relic of a saint. Dared not, but notice, Michael dared not bring against him, that is the devil, a reviling accusation, but said, the Lord rebuke you. You got to be careful what you say about the devil. You can say he's a liar, because the Bible says he's a liar. But you have to be careful. Billy Sunday didn't worry about him. You know, he's the one who would get up there. All these quizzical looks. How many of you have even heard of Billy Sunday? There you go. He's the one who would get up and yell, we've got the devil by the tail tonight. You're thinking, now be careful here. But said the Lord rebuked. Notice contention. And God could straighten out these contentions. Just like if somebody comes to us, what would we say? The Lord rebuke you. If there were a spirit, what would we say? The Lord rebuke you. Well, the same thing with Michael. Michael didn't just come in and say, get out of here, don't do this. He said, the Lord rebuke you. God didn't give him absolute power. God could rebuke Satan anytime, could have stopped the contention, allowed the contention to go between these two spirits. In Daniel chapter 4 and verse 30 through 35, Daniel 4 verse 30 through 35, Daniel 4 and verse 30, the king spoke, this is Nebuchadnezzar, saying, is not this great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling by my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty? Verse 31, while the word was still in the king's mouth, a voice fell from heaven, King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken, the kingdom has departed from you, and they shall drive you from men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make you eat grass like oxen, and seven times shall pass over you, until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever He chooses. See, Satan wasn't totally honest, was he? God is the one who has control in the end run. And then in verse 33, that very hour the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men and ate grass like oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven till his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. At the end of the time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven, and my understanding returned to me, and I blessed the Most High and praised and honored Him who lives forever. For His dominion is an everlasting dominion, and His kingdom is from generation to generation. He wasn't converted, but he was certainly learned the fear of God. Verse 35, all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. All the generals, all the armies, all the kings, all the prime ministers, all the presidents, all the emperors, they're reputed as nothing. He does according to His will in the army of heaven. Does God need an army? Obviously not, but He has an army. He uses an army. He doesn't have to. But God works through humans and He works through spirits. He says, and among the inhabitants of the earth, no one can restrain his hand or say to him, what have you done? Jump to chapter 10, Daniel 10. And we'll start in verse 1. Daniel 10. I know a lot of times we say, well, the Republicans this and the Democrats that, and I've said a pox on both their houses. But they're not in control. I don't care if the Democrats controlled both houses, both the Senate and the House, and the presidency, and had the largest number of people on the Supreme Court. If God's going to destroy the nation, He'll destroy it. And if there were a Republican president and a Republican Senate and a Republican, you know, et cetera, et cetera. If they're not going to obey God, then there's not going to be a solution. It's all in the hands of God. We can blame people and leaders. But, you know, it's the sin of all the nation. We'd say, well, our leaders are sinners. Well, this whole nation has run away from God, and that's the way people want it. They want, not everybody, but how many want there to be gay marriage? Large number. Huge numbers. Daniel chapter 10, verse 1, in the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a message was revealed to Daniel. Daniel would have been, we don't know for sure, but he would have been somewhere around 90, most likely. Some people think he was even over 100. But in the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, it depends on how old he was when he was taken to Babylon originally, whether he was 15 or 17, but he was young, whose name was Belteshazzar. That was his pagan name. The message was true, but the appointed time was long, because Daniel 10, 11, and 12, those three chapters are all one long message, and it ends at the end time. The appointed time was long. He understood the message, sort of understood it, and had understanding of the vision. That is, God told him, but he didn't understand it. He said right at the end, I don't understand it. Verse 2, in those days, I, Daniel, was mourning three full weeks. Now, the guy was about 90. And he had been a man of fasting and prayer. But you know, when you're 90, it may be a little harder to fast. So he didn't do a fast. He just gave up anything to eat and drink that was pleasant. Some people have come to me and said, well, I've got a problem with this, that, or the other type, 1 diabetes or some other problem. If I don't eat, I've got a problem. And I say, well, think about the example of Daniel. He didn't give up everything. People don't have to name them, who if they don't get liquids will get a terrible headache. And we'll do that on the Day of Atonement and get a terrible headache. And I say, well, maybe God would want you to drink a little water and humble yourself. You don't need a migraine. But he says, I ate no pleasant food, nor meat or wine came into my mouth, nor did I anoint myself at all, till three whole weeks were fulfilled. So I guess he had very plain bread and water. Now on the 24th day of the first month, as I was by the side of the great river, that is the Tigris, I lifted my eyes and looked, and behold, a certain man clothed in linen, whose waist was girded with gold of Uphaz. His body was like beryl, his face like the appearance of lightning, his eyes like torches of fire, his arms and feet like burnished bronze in color, and the sound of his words like the voice of a multitude. Now, this is probably not the one who became Jesus Christ. It's guessed by most commentaries that this is Gabriel. Same one that God sent to trying to think of Elizabeth's husband's name, Zacharias, and went to Mary to let them know what was happening. And was Gabriel. But Gabriel is a great and mighty angel. So he can easily have all of this. Verse 11, and I, Daniel, alone saw the vision, for the men who were with me did not see the vision, but a great terror fell upon them, so that they fled to hide themselves. Therefore I was left alone when I saw this great vision, and no strength remained in me, for my vigor was turned to frailty in me, and I retained no strength. Hey, Daniel, when you're 90, it's okay to be weak. Verse 9, yet I heard the sound of his words, and while I heard the sound of his words, I was in a deep sleep on my face, with my face to the ground, like he'd passed out. Suddenly a hand touched me, which made me tremble on my knees and on the palms of my hands. So he's not lying totally down. He's on his hands and knees. And he said to me, O Daniel, man greatly beloved, understand the words that I speak to you and stand upright, for I have now been sent to you. While he was speaking this word to me, I stood trembling. I think all of us would be doing some trembling. Then he said, do not fear, Daniel. Now, that's what I would have wanted to heard first. Do not fear, rather than be scared, Fred. Do not fear, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand, which was at least over 3 weeks earlier, at least 3 weeks, or maybe more, and to humble yourself before your God. He didn't do it with total fast, but with elimination of nice things diet. To humble yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come because of your words. From the first day, but he didn't come for 3 weeks. But, Now here's this mighty angel speaking. And here's why they don't think this is the one that is Jesus Christ. Because Jesus Christ, the Lord of all things, no angel can stand before Him. No angel can cause Him problems. Because He was a mighty member of the family of God. This is sad. If you have tears, prepare to shed them now. Maybe those are tears of happiness. Thinking about Sage. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me. Wait. 21 days. Same time that he was not eating. The prince, is this a man, the prince of Persia? No. This is not a human being. No human being is going to be able to withstand this mighty angel whose appearance is like lightning, his eyes like torches of fire, his arms and feet like burnished bronze in color, and the sounds of his words like the voice of a multitude. It's not a human prince of Persia, but remember, Satan says that he can give it to whoever he wishes. And he has angels under him, and he gives this nation to that one and this one, and God allows it, as long as God gives permission. The prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me. And you know what? God let it happen. God let it happen. He let these angels dispute. 21 days. But behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, that's a righteous angel, came to help me. For I had been left alone there with the kings of Persia. Now I have come to make you understand what will happen to your people in the latter days. For the vision refers to many days yet to come. Drop to Daniel chapter 10 and verse 20, 20 and 21. Verse 20. Then he said, "Do you know why I've come to you? And now I must return to fight with the prince of Persia." See this? "And when I have gone forth, indeed the prince of Greece will come." Another unrighteous. "But I tell you what is noted in the scripture of truth. No one upholds me against these except Michael, your prince." He's the one who's called. Notice Michael, your prince, because it says in Daniel 12:1 that Michael is the great prince that stands watch over the sons of your people. And I want to finish in Ephesians 6. Ephesians 6, verse 11 through 18. We'll skip through some of it. You're aware of this. Ephesians 6, verse 11. "Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against even divisions in the church." It's not flesh and blood. "But against principalities." That's an expression used quite often for spiritual leaders. "Against powers. Against the rulers of the darkness of this age. Against spiritual host of wickedness in the heavenly places." It's not humans. And what we see happening in the news is not telling us the real story of what is happening. And then he talks about, in verse 14, truth. In verse 15, the gospel of peace. In verse 16, faith. A lot of people read this and they see armor, but they forget the truth and the gospel of peace and the faith. But verse 17, "And take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God." So it's talking about Bible study. And then verse 18, praying always. Where is our protection? Where is your protection? My protection. Praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, being watchful to this end with all perseverance and supplication for all the saints. The lesson is obvious. We need God to deliver us from the evil world, the evil spiritual world.